Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Jean Marie.
Collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with Megan Loden. Megan is a writer, a caregiver, and a mother who likes to talk with her pets. Luckily, her husband has to answer for them. So they're sure to have some amazing conversations. She is joining us today from her home in Phoenix, Arizona, where she lives with her husband and three teenagers.
Hi, Megan.
How you doing?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. We're loving the snow up here while y'all are going to have 70s today.
And Jean is lying through her teeth.
Yes, always warm.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got 20 degrees out and the snow is stopped, but it's icy.
Yeah, it's very icy.
Thank you again for taking the time out to join us on our show this morning.
Yes.
Of course. Okay. I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And Megan, I understand that you're going to be talking with us today about familial cerebral. I cannot talk today. Okay, I'll start again. Familial cerebral cavernous malformations. Could you tell us exactly what this condition entails?
Of course. So there are, when talking about CCM, cerebral cavernous malformations, there's two different types. There's either a sporadic form, which is usually just one lesion or a lesion that is associated with a few lesions that are associated with a DVA, or multiple or familial, which is what my twins have. Where they have multiple lesions scattered essentially throughout their brain and, you know, closer to the surface, deep inside, brainstem, all over. They can, in rare cases, also appear in those cases on the spine, in the liver, kidneys, or even in your optic nerves. Wow. And my daughters have the genetic form, which means they have multiples. As they age, they will grow more. The ones that they have may grow, may bleed, may cause life-limiting deficits, seizures, paralysis, migraines. I mean, a whole host of, I mean, if you think about the brain, it affects everything. So, you know, I mean, everything from, you know, one-sided paralysis, strokes, to just random strange seizure symptoms that you might not even realize. Not like, I mean, one of my daughters does have tonic-clonic seizures from it, but that's not always the case either. Seizures can be focal seizures, sensory seizures, all kinds of things. So there really is no end to the life-changing symptoms that can evolve from a CCM diagnosis.
And this is something that they were born with, but you only found out about recently. Can you walk us through how that came to be?
Correct. Yes. So my identical girls are almost 18 years old. In October of 2020, they were at school and I got a very panicked phone call from twin A to tell me that her sister had a seizure and the paramedics were coming and we needed to go to the hospital. They weren't sure, like, should they take her by ambulance? They had no record of a seizure disorder, but obviously epilepsy parents know that you don't necessarily bring your kid to the ER by ambulance, no less. Every time they have a seizure, you'd never leave. So they, of course, wanted to speak with me and I said, no, she's never had a seizure before. Bring her by ambulance. And I went and picked up her sister and we went to the hospital. In the emergency room, we waited and waited and they had her like in a hallway. It was just a regular adult hospital, just the nearest local hospital. And we were in the hallway and they took her for a CT and they took her for x-rays and they did an EKG and they just all kinds of tests and things that I didn't know what they were. I didn't, I mean, they explained kind of, but they're, you know, managing so many patients that my daughter's in a hallway. She doesn't even have a curtain around her. She's just in a hallway. So, you know, it's a little hectic. And people are coming and going and all kinds of doctors are coming in. And then an emergency room doctor finally came to me and said, I would like to send her by ambulance to Phoenix Children's Hospital, where they can help you figure out what's going on. We see something on her CT that looks like some sort of a lesion. They didn't know exactly what it was. He had already spoken with the neurology staff on call in the ER and wanted us to go ahead and get over there. So she and I went there by ambulance and sat for several hours, and they sent her for an MRI, and they're, you know, they're things that I didn't even know to be worried about, because I was so out of, like, she had migraines as a child, as a small child, and that was it. There was never any indication that anything was really wrong. I had her treated for migraines. The neurologist at the time didn't think anything of it, so I didn't really know how worried to be. I think that kind of helped me to stay a little bit calmer than maybe I would now. I'm not as calm now about these things. And so I was talking to my husband and to her father, my ex-husband, and to her sister, and trying to keep everybody kind of updated as best I could, but I didn't really know what I was really talking about. And then at about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, a neurosurgeon by the name of David Chaffron came in, and in his scrubs with his scrub cap and his bag, like, you could tell he was, after a long day of, you know, surgery and bad news after bad news, he's getting ready to finally go home for the day to his wife and his kids and, you know, whatever his situation is. And he says, has anybody explained to you what's going on? And I said, no. And Cadence, my twin, had just been asleep most of the day. She just was exhausted. That seizure took it right out of her. And so he put his bag down and brought the stool over and sat next to Cadence on the bed and looked at her and asked her how she was feeling and talked to her like a person for once, instead of just rattling off a chart and running out of the room. And then he opened his computer and started showing us scan after scan after scan with all these little spots. We could see little white spots and then spots that had like darker and lighter shades around them to indicate where she was bleeding, and that he asked all kinds of questions that no one had asked her before, if she had noticed anything, any odd sensations, any odd numbness, anything. And it kind of clicked. I could see it clicking with my daughter that she'd never mentioned she was having these weird little numb spots on her face, and they happened so quickly she'd never mentioned it. And to be quite honest, if she had at the time with nothing else, I would have been like, that's weird. So, you know, so he said that those are sensory seizures, and it fits in perfectly with where her two biggest lesions were that were bleeding, and that he was going to bring her case to their weekly conference with all the neurology and neurosurgical team and see what they were going to do moving forward. And he wrote down his cell phone number. He told me that they're, and I don't think, it's hard to recall exactly. I don't think he remembered the exact name, but he knew there was a foundation, a nonprofit foundation that would have resources and a community for us. So he encouraged me to look at that, because the information that was out there, like with many, you know, rare or like bordering on rare diseases, there's just not a lot out there that makes sense to normal people like me who didn't go to med school, you know. And he came back and, you know, told me that he'd be back in the morning and we'd hopefully be able to go home as long as her seizures were managed. And he left, and Cadence looked at me and was just like, we were just stunned. We didn't know what to say. I said, okay, well, we'll wait and see what he says. And, you know, you try to be positive, but I'm not going to lie. She's 16. At that point, I'm not going to lie to her. And then a nurse, I think they can kind of, like, children's hospitals, I feel like they can kind of tell when a parent's getting ready to crack, you know? And so a nurse came in and said, I'm going to, you know, do a little bit of an exam. We have to do a lot of neuro exams, and I'm going to set her up for her, get everything situated for her EKG. So if you need to, you know, go get a coffee or a water or make a phone call, I'm going to be in here for the next, you know, 10 or 15 minutes. And I just went out in the hallway, and I knew I had to call, like, her dad and my husband and put the word out what was going on. And I just like it, I probably sat in the hallway, just not even like reacting, just sitting like, what is going on, for probably a solid 5 minutes, just sitting on the floor in the hallway. Like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. During the course of the conversation, he did tell me it is genetic, which means that her identical twin sister does have this. And it is not like, get her in here and let's put her in a tube right now, but it is important that we get her scanned to make sure that she doesn't have bleeding lesions as well. Mm-hmm. It was a significant 180 in just seconds, like mm-hmm. everything in my whole life completely upended.
Yeah.
But Megan, was this an active bleed?
Yes.
So
yes.
How were they treating it then to stop the bleed?
They weren't. Okay. They don't.
Okay.
If there's no treatment for this disease, the only treatment is surgery. So if you don't have surgery, they just, and sometimes they do wait and see, because they don't, these lesions don't, they very rarely abruptly like rupture and bleed. It's more like a slow leak hemorrhage, okay. Is what they call it.
Okay.
So the risk of someone actually having like an aneurysm for something like this is small. It does happen, of mm-hmm. course, mm-hmm. But it's not as high as people think when you think of like, oh my gosh, there's a bleeding lesion right. in my mm-hmm. brain. Right. I'm going to go to sleep and not wake up. That's right. not,
okay.
it does happen, but it's not as common.
Okay. Okay.
But still, I mean, it must have been overwhelming. And
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. A demarcation yeah. in your life before and after that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. Absolutely. Yes. My life is definitely divided into before and after. Everything yeah. is, it has changed every aspect of my life by leaps and bounds. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So how did your healthcare team decide to treat the first twin and then eventually the second, if you had to?
So the first, I did take his advice, the neurosurgeon's advice at Phoenix Children's Hospital, and did some digging around and discovered that we live in one of the most highly sought after neurosurgical cities in the world. We have patients that come here to Barrow to see Dr. Michael Lawton from all over the world. So on the advice of many parents and many community, you know, patients and caregivers, and throughout my kind of travels among the Angioma Alliance circles on Facebook, I discovered that we have this gold mine in our backyard. And I talked to a bunch of parents that said, you know, if you're there, you need to get a second opinion, no matter what Phoenix mm-hmm. Children says. Mm-hmm. And so when I spoke with Dr. Shafron, he called me and we set up a consultation, and I asked to speak to him about getting all of our information set up with Dr. Lawton so that we could get a second opinion. Mm-hmm. He did agree that his team thought it was surgical, and I told him, no offense, I'm not going to just let any old neurosurgeon cut into my daughter's head. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to do that. So I would, you know, and he was very kind. He actually assisted in Cadence's surgery with Dr. Michael Lawton in December of 2020. She had her surgery December 15th. She had two lesions removed from her sensory, like pushing in, like right in between her sensory and motor strip.
Okay.
We spent 3 days in the hospital and then she came home, which I was completely surprised by. They kick them pretty quickly. She had a lot of therapies, a lot. She did occupational therapy and speech therapy and physical therapy she was in therapies through March. Mm-hmm. And then now she's just kind of using those tools to kind of try and rebuild all those connections.
Right.
And then in January, we finally got her sister into an MRI machine and found out that she had a 3-centimeter lesion in her left frontal lobe that was bleeding and had bled, they assumed at that point, at least one time prior. Okay. So again, we went back to Dr. Lawton, mm-hmm. And Dr. Chaffron helped me get everything sent over. I literally, if anybody takes anything away from medical staff, it is like this neurosurgeon, Dr. Chaffron. He's like next to the Pope in my house at this point. He's helped us so much and given so much of his time, personal time, mm-hmm. to help us get things done quickly. And he knows that, I hope he knows how grateful we are. Mm-hmm. And he has a fantastic reputation with other parents that I know that have dealt with him. So he helped us get everything sent over. And then March 4th of 2021, we went back to surgery for Kendall. And now we're just doing scans. Like, we'll do scans in March, every year, mm-hmm. and just keep an eye on her. And then in June of every year for her sister to keep an eye on her sister. Okay. And that's where we're at. Just keep counting and waiting and watching, basically.
Okay. And I guess I have a couple questions. So many questions. Megan, how are the girls feeling now? And do you think, I mean, you're in a very unique position where the girls are, not that they're experiencing the same thing necessarily. I'm sure their symptoms are different and everything that they're experiencing is slightly different. But do you think that it was advantageous for them to have such a close, someone so close to them experiencing those same things and helping to support them along the way? Not to mention an amazing family in as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically it was good and bad. It was okay. Like good news, bad news. Mm-hmm. I think for my first twin that had surgery, I think she kind of felt very almost like panicked for her sister because her recovery was really rough.
Oh.
But I think that helped them. It helped my second twin to kind of bond with her sister, knowing that she had already been through it, she had done it, she came through it, she was okay. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, I think, gave her the strength to do it a little bit. And mm-hmm. it's very strange because when they were growing up, when they were much younger, my twin A was always the one that went first. Oh. It was like, you need to go to the dentist, who's gonna go first? And her sister was always, she's gonna go. And this time it was the opposite. It just kind of worked out to be the opposite, where she really didn't have much choice in the matter.
Right.
But it did definitely strengthen their bond. It was hard for them, I think, at their age, because as a parent, not a patient, but a parent, I have seen so many of my own peers that don't know what to say. They don't know how to interact. And so they will say nothing, which is fair. Mm-hmm. They'll say the wrong thing, again, mm-hmm. fair. But I'm an adult and I have the emotional maturity to know that, like, while that may not have been the most helpful thing for someone to say, they're trying to connect and they're mm-hmm. trying to be supportive. And this is the only way they know how. Mm-hmm. And thank God for that, that they don't know how to relate to something like this. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. They'll say things like, you know, well, if you've already done this before, like, and it, I know it's not meant to be like, it's no big deal because this is the second time, but it's hard for me to not hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm an adult. My daughters can't, it's harder for them to put that into perspective. So I think the fact that they do have each other and they do share this, you know, like everything else in their life, including their birthday. I think that has helped them to kind of get through it. And I know, like for one of my twins, she didn't really get a whole lot of support within our school, within her team, friend group. There weren't a whole lot of, you know, people reaching out, checking in. And that was really hard. Of course, it was hard for her. It was hard for me to see it mm-hmm. because I know she's terrified. I know mm-hmm. she's dealing with an unimaginable situation. And I know that it's because these kids don't know how to deal with that. They don't know mm-hmm. how to process that and how to connect to that. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they don't care. They just don't know how.
Right.
And they're kids. They're teenagers.
Okay.
But she said, that's okay. I have my sister.
Oh,
and
oh,
it
nice.
Made me happy and made mm-hmm. me devastated yes. all at the same time.
Right. Well, besides your girls bonding together, was there anything else that helped them get through all of this?
I think, honestly, they are very young. So of course we know that, you know, the younger people tend to physically bounce back a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. And I think even though my first twin that had surgery struggled a bit more, she was absolutely able to bounce back. I would still be in the hospital is what I would still be in the hospital. Somebody needs to help me to the bathroom, bring me my apple juice. I would still mm-hmm. be a mess. Mm-hmm. So I think just the fact that they were able to bounce back a little bit quicker than even I had expected. And they do know that the few friends and support that they have around them that have really been there for them, like we pointed out, I don't say you're so strong, you're so brave all the time, but I point out to them that I am incredibly proud of them mm-hmm. and how, you know, they are willing to be not just strong and resilient, but vulnerable. And if they're scared, they're able to come and talk to us about it. I want them to know that that's important as well. Sure. It's not just important to, you know, pretend everything's fine. I want them to know that they could come talk to me. They could go talk to a teacher. They could talk to, you know, there are a few friends mm-hmm. that really have been there to support them. And we've had a pretty incredible response from some surprising people. That have, you know, become like family to us. My vice chair, Chris, has been amazing, an amazing support for me and for my girls. We've connected with a ton of other parents and just, you know, parents that check in on the girls, and I'll ask, you know, I'll tell the girls, oh, you know, so-and-so asked about you in our Facebook group today. And it makes them feel good that, you know, other people are supporting them from afar, and they don't need to be in their face to do it. Like they're really, it sounds cheesy, but they are inspiring other families
absolutely.
Keep going.
Right. As are you, because it sounds like you are setting an amazing example mm-hmm. for them yeah. and an amazing example for other parents. So
I try. Thank you.
Yeah,
I try.
I mean, I can't even imagine, you know, having to go through it with one child, but then realizing in the back of your mind, well, it's genetic, and the other one is going to have it too. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right. Going through it again.
Yeah.
Did the girls have to have any genetic testing because of this?
They did. Well, I mean, they didn't have to. There is a benefit to doing that, really mostly because there are three different types of familial cerebral cavernous malformations. They're labeled as CCM 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And CCM 3 can be much more aggressive.
Oh.
The symptoms are far more debilitating, far younger.
Okay.
They have far more bleeds. They're at a higher rate of life-limiting symptoms and complications.
Okay.
And I kind of held my breath when we did their testing for that reason.
Okay.
And that was really the reason that the neurologist really recommended that we do the testing, was just because if it is on the off chance that it is CCM3, which is a very, very, very small percentage, even though familial CCM is fairly rare, inside mm-hmm. of that, CCM3 is the least common.
Okay.
We just needed to make sure, because if that's the case, then we want to be far more diligent about checking their spines, because mm-hmm. those lesions are more common in CCM3. Checking their other organs, those are more common in CCM3. Mm-hmm. All these things that fortunately, like, we have to keep an eye on because sure. they still have the disease, but mm-hmm. we don't have to be as concerned mm-hmm. because it's CCM1.
Okay.
Thank God.
Okay.
So yeah. So it was a big relief, and the neurologist said that they thought that was the case. Mm-hmm. But they just wanted to make sure.
Good.
And Megan, how has this diagnosis changed the way that you and your family look at things and approach things?
I mean, how has it not? honestly, before, I wouldn't say obsessed, but I was a little borderline obsessed with, like, go, 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 and building a career and building a life and having all these things, all this stuff, almost in like a very neurotic way. I had all these goals and all these plans and all mm-hmm. these things that I wanted to do. And I wanted to work and contribute to my household and, you know, redo the floors and go on a vacation twice mm-hmm. a year, like all just ridiculous things that didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And I got really hung up in I put my effort in the wrong places all the time, constantly with, you know, conflicted relationships and things that weren't really worth my energy. And at this point, myself and even my girls, I've seen them kind of just walk away from things that aren't really serving us mm-hmm. anymore. Like if it's not serving me, mm-hmm. I just don't have the time. There's mm-hmm. so many other things going on in my life that are actually important and are worth it. And I'm not always running to a doctor or running mm-hmm. to a hospital mm-hmm. or headed to a clinic. Mm-hmm. But when I'm not, I want to be, you know, spending as much of that time as I can with my girls mm-hmm. and with my son and my husband, with our family mm-hmm. and doing things that are actually important and not be always wishing today away and waiting for the next big thing, the next big moment to come and make it better. The next big moment may or may not come, so we better enjoy what's happening right now.
Sure.
And I've seen my daughters, even at their young age, you know, mm-hmm. as high schoolers, I've seen them kind of walk away from relationships, from friendships, from friend groups that are just not really healthy mm-hmm. in a way that I certainly didn't do when I was their age. Mm-hmm. The more drama, the better as a 16-year-old girl, you know.
Sure.
But they're like, no, that's too much. I'm not doing that. Mm. Okay. No, I don't need that. We'll have a very small, they have a very small group of mm-hmm. amazing friends that have really been there for them. And they recognize how much better that is than having a giant group of friends that they can't really count on.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, and in this, I was going to say Facebook, but Meta age. Meta,
yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand the perspective, and that sounds like a very healthy way of approaching everything. Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. it's funny you mention perspective because mm-hmm. it changes your whole perspective on life
mm-hmm.
and how you view things, what's important mm-hmm. and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you mentioned your daughter's friends and all of that. Megan, what role have they and your family played through all of this, your journey? Also, are there any other support groups that you found to be helpful?
I think, honestly, for my daughters, their small group of friends and their few really supportive teachers and staff at their school have been very, very helpful to them because they know that they have that little group that is going to kind of check in on them and is going to be watching out for them. And not just in like a, look at me, look how great I am. Because, mm-hmm. you know, in high school, I think we all know that it's fairly common for it to be, oh, that was my best friend and she mm-hmm. had surgery. Mm-hmm. She was not your best friend. Stop lying. Like, you know, and I think that they've been able to kind of wade through who really is there for them and who's really helpful. And we've just had, you know, parents in the community and teachers and staff members at school that have called just to check in. You know, they hadn't heard anything about, you know, either of the girls in a little bit. They're hoping no news is good news. How are they doing? Is there anything that we, you know, need to be aware of? Anything we can help them with at school, on campus, or, you know, in the community, whatever it is. I think those connections have been more beneficial to my girls than those people realize. They've made a bigger impact on my daughters than they realize. Even though there's not a ton of them, mm-hmm. the few of them really, they really matter. They really count. And those are the people that my daughters will remember when they're my age, mm-hmm. that they were there to, you know, that PE teacher was really there for them and really mm-hmm. checked in on them. And didn't do it in a showy, obnoxious, dramatic, look at me, look how great I am, looking out for my students way. Like she mm-hmm. really takes them aside to see how they're doing and right. to ask about right. them and emails me and says, you know, I got your daughter in my class this semester. I'm going to be looking out for her. Is there anything new I should be aware of? Like she's really, and she's not, like I said, it's not showy. It's not obnoxious. Mm-hmm. It's just in the background, you know, looking out for her students. And those are the people that really matter. And for me, it's really just been other parents, other CCM parents, other rare disease parents. That community is like no other in the world. And I never wanted to be a part of it, but I am definitely grateful that they're there and they are so supportive and they embrace every child, every parent, every situation, nobody is, you know, telling me, well, be grateful that they can walk, be grateful they aren't tube fed, be grateful. Like, nobody ever says those things to one another in those circles. We are all just recognizing that this is hard, and we're here to support each other, make each other laugh, give each other stupid little hacks like, hey, when you go to the doctor, don't forget to do this. Or, hey, mm-hmm. if you're having a rough day, maybe try that. You know, just little tips that are helping me process everything and get through it and keep pushing forward in a cautiously optimistic manner for my daughters, to set that example for them.
Excellent.
And yeah. I was looking at the Angioma Alliance website, and something that struck me as unique and interesting was that it even has like a teen support group or teen group meeting, which I thought was fascinating.
They do. Right. They do. They have it on Zoom. My daughters, their cheer season is finally over. And we are very lucky that they've been able to participate. I mean, you know, with slight interruptions here and there for surgeries and things, but they've been able to participate and cheer throughout this whole thing, taking little breaks here and there. But otherwise, I told them once cheer is over, I would like you guys to like just show up to a couple of them and see. It's hard. I think it's hard to get the kids to engage in these types of things. And I don't know if it's because they don't want to talk about it, or if it's because they're afraid of new challenges, new people, mm-hmm. new groups. I don't know. But I said, I'm going to make you do it one time. You don't have to do it over and over. I'm going to make you do it one time. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of think that's the end of my reach at this point. They're almost 18.
Oh, sure.
But I do like that they have that for any kids that want to participate, because it's so isolating. I know it's isolating for parents. It's definitely isolating for the kids.
Sure.
Sure. And Megan, what role have like things like nutrition and fitness and self-care played in your life as a mother and a caregiver through
just
all of this?
Just to keep up with yes. all this.
Yeah, it's honestly, before, and it happened all at a funny time with COVID. Mm-hmm. I had already stopped going to the gym every day because okay. of COVID. Mm-hmm. So I have since started going for a walk outside every day at lunch. I have a very close relationship with my sister-in-law, Candace. We talk all the time, at least 3 or 4 days a week. And oftentimes that will be during her lunch, mm-hmm. Which is an hour. So I will walk around the neighborhood mm-hmm. outside, and just kind of, she lets me vent. She lets me talk about, you know, if there's stuff going on with the girls, she wants to hear about it. But if I'm not ready to talk about it, she's cool with that. Like, mm-hmm. so that is like getting outside, moving around, instead of just sitting here at my desk working, you know, or writing about my kids mm-hmm. is great. It's therapeutic, but I need to like move around mm-hmm. and it's been hard because if we have a lot of appointments, mm-hmm. I am in the car right. driving
right
all over. So it's harder to kind of plan for moving my body and for eating well. And I recently actually put together a bag of like a hospital bag in my mm-hmm. trunk with like spare socks and a sweater, and because I am not going to be stuck in a freezing cold hospital in shorts and a tank top with flip-flops with no Tylenol, because as a parent, if you need Tylenol or aspirin because you have a headache mm-hmm. because you haven't eaten because mm-hmm. you're running around with your kid and mm-hmm. now you're in the ER mm-hmm. you're at the mercy of a nurse who may or may not have Aleve or Tylenol or Motrin in their purse. If they have it, they're more than willing to give it to you right. as a parent. Absolutely. But they may not. Mm-hmm. So I have little things and like snacks to prevent the headache from sure. the beginning, yeah, you know. It's just really, it's a hard balance, and I am definitely still learning as I go. I'm not a stress eater. I'm the opposite.
Oh,
so it's hard for me. Like I have to kind of like I start to get sure. a headache. I'm like, oh, what did I eat today? A handful of goldfish. That's not food. And I'll like have to like make myself a sandwich or a salad or heat some soup up or something. Nutrition is hard. It's always been hard for me. I just get busy and I don't think about it. Mm-hmm. And with this, I'm always busy and right. I'm always stressed out.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, you probably need to schedule nutrition into that, into your program.
Right, and it's turned into that now where I go on my walk and I'm on the phone and I'll check the mail and kind of wander around and note what's going on in the neighborhood. And then I come home and I'm like, okay, before I go upstairs to my desk to go back to my day, I need to eat something. Right. So what am I going to have? And like real food.
Might not be a bad idea to put a reminder in your phone.
I know, maybe like 1 o'clock. That's what I need to do so I don't forget.
Go eat.
Because, you're, as a caregiver and a parent,
you gotta stay with them.
You're a vital key to this whole thing. And they're very, very lucky to have you.
Right. Megan, what's been the most surprising thing that you've learned about yourself during all of this over the last couple of years?
To be honest, doing things like this.
Podcasting?
I am
advocacy.
Talking to people I don't know. Chairing a local nonprofit chapter. Giving a speech in front of I'm not entirely sure how many people were actually there at November at our November walk, but like I just kept talking, and I have like typically a almost crippling social anxiety, but this is one of those things that has to be more important because there's no one in the world that I wouldn't talk to or reach out to if there's just a fraction of a prayer that it might spark interest in somebody that might say, hey, you know, maybe I'd like to go into research and, you know, see about finding an actual treatment that doesn't involve surgery for these children and all the patients, children, adults that are living with this. So it's really, it's not easy for me to do this, but I think that surprised me the most that I am like, all right, let's go meet some people. Let's go talk to some people. Let's call these people I don't know. Let's go do a podcast with people I don't know. Let's go to a park and talk to a whole bunch of people about one of the, well, absolutely, the single most devastating moment of my life. And I'm just out there sharing it for everybody to hear because there's a chance, there's a small chance that it might spark something in someone that they might remember when they're headed into college. Like, what's my major?
Right.
Maybe this is it. And maybe that's the person that's going to find an actual treatment or, God help us all, a cure. That would be amazing.
Right.
So
I
think that has been the most surprising thing for sure.
Well, and you're doing an amazing
job. Amazing job.
Absolutely.
Definitely an advocate. But Megan, what advice would you have for someone, say their friend or a family member just recently got diagnosed with FCCM?
Reach out to other people, other parents, other caregivers, or if you've been diagnosed yourself, reach out to patients, find support groups. Whatever your diagnosis is, and no matter how rare it is, you will find a community on the internet. They're there. And it's not like, I always tell people like, oh, you know, social media is kind of a nightmare. And in a lot of ways it is. But when it comes to things like this, I haven't experienced that at all. Like I have definitely been putting myself out there more since my girls have been diagnosed. Like I said, just for awareness. It's really just to raise awareness about their disease and how it impacts people. Because I'd never heard of it before. So I know a lot of people haven't. And I want to raise that awareness. And on social media, I have found such an amazing community of men and women, patients, caregivers, parents of adult children, whatever the case may be. And they have really supported me and my whole family and made me feel less alone. And I feel like that's how I'm able to kind of get through it. And even when I have questions about like, you know, this doctor said this thing and I don't really understand. They said it and then they were gone. And I'm like, I don't know what that means or how to, what does this mean? And trying to get one of them on the phone, good luck. So I am able to kind of bounce things off of other parents too. So it helps on a lot of levels to build that community. And these communities are incredibly welcoming. I mean, I had parents that were reaching out to me, answering my DMs at like 2 in the morning you know, giving me resources and printouts and breathing exercises and whatever, just things that it is a remarkable group of people that you will find on the internet that would be, you know, more than willing to talk you off the ledge or mm-hmm. help you decipher that weird thing that the doctor said. Because as a parent, it's like, yeah, you do need to wait to hear back from the doctor, of course, mm-hmm. but telling a parent with a child in some sort of a medical possible crisis mm-hmm. that you just need to wait for the doctor to call back is not super helpful in the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's even just like, well, my kid had something similar and it turned out that it was, you know, the stress of that moment at the hospital. And that's actually exactly what wound up happening with my kid. So I'm like, all right, cool. You know, so those kinds of things, I would say reaching out for support and for community, even when it doesn't feel natural,
okay.
is absolutely the best thing you can do when you or a loved one is diagnosed with something that is life changing like this.
That's great advice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Megan, what does the future look like for your twins? What's coming up?
Well, they are honestly mm-hmm. determined more than ever to just kind of, you know, have a life. Their doctors have said from the very beginning, let them live as much as they can, as long as they can. And that could be forever. Mm-hmm. They could never have another surgery or symptom for the rest of their lives as of, you know, right this minute. Mm-hmm. So we're going to live as if that's true. And just, you know, buy travel insurance in the meantime, instead of them going all the way up to, they were going to go to Flagstaff to go to NAU next year. They're okay. going to stay home for a year, maybe two,
okay.
In part because they don't really know what they want to do and they need to be a little more choosy than mm-hmm. they might have thought prior as far as their life plans long term. Mm-hmm. And then in part because their doctors are here. They're mm-hmm. you know, they have the best doctors in the world. Why would they go somewhere else?
Right.
And you know, we're putting in a pool because we're not moving apparently. When we retire, we're staying here close to their doctors. And you know, so there's that. Yeah, they're just kind of taking things as they come, and I am incredibly proud to be their mother. Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
And they're very fortunate.
Yes,
to
have you. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you.
You have definitely been through a lot the last couple of years. How has all of this affected your writing?
I've completely pivoted. I could not care any less about all the typical clickbaity mom blogger stuff that I typically catered to before. Like before, I would write for places that are very, you know, it's great. This is not a knock at all, but I'd write for places like Scary Mommy and Blunt Moms and Sandwiches and Psych Meds. Great places for mom blog stuff. It's great. And I did feel good doing it and it was fun, but my writing at this point definitely has shifted. It mm-hmm. is, for work, I write about twins and that's mm-hmm. kind of my professional wheelhouse, but on a personal level, my writing has become almost exclusively about advocacy. Everything that I do That's is great. Just trying to reach yeah. another person, trying to connect to another mom or let another patient know that they're not alone. There's a whole mess of us out here. There's a whole group of us out here. Mm-hmm. And we are more than happy to welcome anybody into our community that needs that support. So that's just kind of now that's everything that I write about. I am always thinking, I mean, first of all, I have to clear with my kids because they are, you know, old enough now. I don't want to put all their stuff out there for everyone to see without asking. But I really, they know that I am writing everything that I write is only to raise awareness and to advocate for this disease and for how it impacts so many families in the world. Right. And that, you know, we just want to get the right people looking at us to maybe, hopefully,
right.
get the right person that'll say, you know, I this is what I want to do with my life. You know, we have some great teams on this. And, you know, if we can just keep that growing, eventually there will be a pill instead of a surgery. And then maybe one day there'll be a cure mm-hmm. altogether. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a genetic...
I was going to say that, yeah, like CRISPR and edit, yeah, gene editing.
Yeah, I follow a CRISPR mm-hmm. Doctor.
Oh, you follow a CRISPR?
I follow a CRISPR doctor on TikTok, and I'll absolutely make sure that she's got FCCM in her wheelhouse mm-hmm. so that she can
yes,
work on it.
Yes, yeah. That's what we need. Yes.
And Megan, what do you wish people knew about FCCM? What are some common misconceptions?
I think a lot of the common misconception, I know at least when my girls were first diagnosed, was like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, their life is over.
Oh,
this
okay.
is it. Sure. It's over. But there are so many patients that live with this that never have any symptoms. Mm-hmm. Never. They live long, normal, quote unquote, normal, mm-hmm. Healthy lives and never have any idea that they even have this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because the more people don't really care until it impacts them,
absolutely.
Until they see a connection. And so knowing that you probably know someone who knows someone at least mm-hmm. that is affected with this, I think will kind of make it more personal for people and make people really think about how they might be able to raise awareness and how they might be able to advocate. I think another thing is, you know, especially when you're dealing with genetic diseases, like mm-hmm. maybe don't tell people they'll grow out of it.
Oh.
Like, that's not.
What?
That's not. Oh, that's
wow.
not cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. That's not cool. It happens a lot with my girls where people tell them that they might grow out of it one day, or they you know, tell them, well, at least, like, that's like my number one no-no. Mm-hmm. Well, at least, mm-hmm. like, just don't say that mm-hmm. to people, whether they're suffering from familial CCM or anything mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. Don't say, well, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not cool. That's mm-hmm. not nice. Mm-hmm. It's just, I know where it comes from. It comes mm-hmm. from a place of, like, trying to look at the bright side. Mm-hmm. And,
right.
But we say that to ourselves every day. Mm-hmm. Every day I tell myself, well, at least. Mm-hmm. I don't need to hear it from other people. That's how I get out of bed in the morning. I don't need other people to point it out, you know?
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. How can our listeners learn more about you and FCCM?
So, I have a brand spanking new website, meganloden.com.
Okay.
And you can go on there. I try to post just kind of like what's been going on. Any updates will be on there. I also have a newsletter every month where I'll put out like kind of like a good beefy blog post, and then I like to do a printable every month, and just some recommendations, podcast books, some fun stuff too, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's 'tis the season, Cadbury mini eggs are out, that mm-hmm. sort of thing.
Okay.
Like self-care tips, stuff like that.
Good.
I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I have Twitter. I don't really know how to use it, to be perfectly honest, at Megan Loden. And then the Angioma Alliance is angioma.org. You could go on there, and I have that linked on my website as well. You can go on there and learn more. There's like fast facts and stuff about like diet and lifestyle and trials that are going on. If you want to donate, they even have a cute little shop with cute little stuff you can purchase. So
nice.
Yeah. Those okay. are the main places.
We will definitely put links for that on our website.
And you'll see it on our TikTok.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you will.
Well, Megan, I can't thank you. We can't thank you enough for coming on our show this morning. We've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Mm-hmm. And we just really appreciate your time and your energy, your mm-hmm. advocacy, and all that you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great to chat with you guys today.
We will definitely get this word out to our listeners and our future Doctors of America.
Yes. And yes. Both MDs and PhDs.
Researchers, yep. CRISPRs, let's get working on it.
Yep.
That's right.
Yes. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, or Instagram.
Or Meta.
Or Meta.
Sorry.
Facebook.
I kept calling it Metro. You can get on the Metro, but you won't get any info about us.
Meta on the Metro.
Yes. And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast and follow us on Apple. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, and always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding your medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.
Till next week.